On September 20th, 2004, WHFR-FM was granted a license by the Federal Communications Commission to serve the public interest as a public trustee until October 1st, 2012. Our license will expire on October 1st, 2012. We filed an application for license renewal with the FCC on May 30th, 2012. A copy of this application is available for inspection during our regular business hours. It contains information concerning the station's performance over the last 8 years. Individuals who wish to advise the FCC of facts relating to our renewal application and to whether this station has operated in the public interest should file comments and petitions with the FCC by September 1st. 2012. Further information concerning the FCC's broadcast license renewal process is available at 5101 Evergreen Road, Dearborn, Michigan 48128, or may be obtained from the FCC, Washington, D.C. 20554, or www.fcc.gov.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. This is June the 1st, 2012. Happy June, if anybody out there is named June. And I hope you're having a great day. Little rainy in Dearborn today, but in the studio, the roof isn't leaking, so we're just fine here. Of course, you know the new WHFR Journal is all about local news and alternative views. And we're happy to present those to you from the Dearborn Press and Guide, Dearborn Times Herald, and DearbornPatch.com, as well as special guests. And we have a couple online for today. But let's introduce ourselves here. My name is Jay Koronick, and I'm the host of the show, as well as in the studio. I have our WHFR News Director, Kevin Brough. So welcome, Kevin.
All right. Good to be here.
Oh, thank you. Good to have your microphone working today. But let's immediately go to our first special guest, Kristen Taylor. Now, if that name hasn't been mentioned too much in the show in the past, I know we've mentioned a couple of times, you may be hearing it more in the future. She's becoming known as a sort of a spokesperson for, first of all, a Facebook group that she began a while ago called Dearborn Responsibility and Accountability. Dearborn City, tell us about it. Kristen Taylor, welcome to WHFR.
Thank you very much. It's the Dearborn Residents for Accountability.
Okay, Dearborn Residents for Accountability. We were talking earlier, you think if people wanted to find it at facebook.com, they could just type in maybe Dearborn Accountability, and that would probably get
them to it. Just went and checked it. Type in Dearborn Residents for Accountability, okay. And it pops up.
The whole name, right. Well, we want to find out a little bit about your background, but tell us about Dearborn Residents for Accountability Group. What will they find there when they go to that webpage?
Well, right now on the Facebook page, you'll find a lot of conversations. We've put the group together just over a month now that we've been together, and we started focusing on the budget. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of information and a lot of questions and discussion about the Dearborn budget, what it looked like, and what it was really about. And now we're transitioning from the budget into deciding what it is that this group will be about as we move forward.
Yes, I saw on that page last night that you pull together groups of citizens and community that want to talk about the direction for that group and for that for the Facebook group and of course how to get more involved in Dearborn government and maybe lead to advocacy of issues. From what I'm understanding, though, this group is not necessarily pro or con any issue or any stance on an issue, and not necessarily for any candidate, pro
right.
or con, right? I mean, if
exactly.
we're going into election fall, but okay. So, it flashed through my head a couple of weeks ago, and I have these flashes at times, probably because of my age, but why doesn't the city of Dearborn, through their website and their Office of Communications, Mary Landrosh, fine job, Mary, but I think the times have changed from just writing press releases a couple times a week about an event that's coming up. I think there needs to be more interaction. I did compliment, I'm sure it was Mary or someone there in the city that actually put the preliminary proposals for the budgets for the next 3 years on the website a couple months ago. I never saw that happen before in the history of Dearborn. And an English translation of what some of those budgets are about, at least a summary in their opinion of what some of the issues and some of the reductions or support was going to be. But I think there should be so much more. And so I don't want to undercut your group at the outset because I think it's something everybody in Dearborn should check out and try to contribute to, ideas, support, however, because the goal is, well, as they call it, transparency. You know, it's getting the information out there up front so everybody can easily sit down and think about it, assess it, talk about it themselves, and find out where they're coming from. Because without the information about what's really going on and really happening and what the issues really are, you're just blowing in the wind. I mean, and it's unfortunate because Kevin and I look at the commentaries a lot for the different blogs as well as Patch.com. And some of the people, they blow in the wind frequently, and I wonder if they've actually even read the newspapers to get the details that are there. But there's a lot more than just the newspaper information, isn't there, that should be shared, yeah, and understood?
There certainly is. I mean, when I started this, even just last year going through the budget process and then starting this year trying to find any information, and you can go to the public meetings, but often they're getting better at them, but most of the public meetings, they don't have copies for the residents who are there. They only have copies for the people they know are coming. So even there, it's difficult, and you can afterwards ask and get it if you need it. But it was just very difficult to find the information readily available. You could search through the website, and even now I still have trouble sometimes finding exactly the document I'm looking for, and I know where to go. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely a problem. I don't necessarily blame the city on that. I don't know. Their budgets are going down too, yeah, just like everything else.
Well, but communication should be, from public officials, should be the one of their top priorities. First of all, let them know what's happening or not happening because of lack of people, whatever. It's strange to me, for example, that the council minutes, when Dearborn City Council meets, the website even says, hey, here's where you can go and you can read the minutes. Well, I don't know who's writing the minutes or who's typing them in, but it seems like it's at least a month or two, or in one case, a couple of months. It was 3 months behind the meeting. So if you weren't at the meeting, you wouldn't even see what happened. There's no way to find out. Now, I know they're doing, I think they're still doing live cable television shows of at least city council meetings. So, but they rotate so crazy a lot. But if you don't watch those, the channel on Comcast or WOW, I think it's channel 12 on Comcast and 10 on WOW cable in Dearborn, then you have to watch it a lot in order to find out exactly when these shows might come up. And that's, you know, it's kind of boring to watch 3 hours sometimes of issues about voting on this or that resolution. And some of them are really non-issues. I mean, seriously, it's just, we've got to fix some toilets in the city hall or something. I mean, it's just maintenance stuff. And oh, my God. So you start nodding off. But if you could read the minutes afterwards, then you could see what happened. The problem with that is you read the minutes afterwards, you've got an opinion, there's no way to share it. It's already over and done with. Mm-hmm. So in a way, the agenda in some detail, I think, should be shared with the public before the meeting. I mean, you know, they distribute to all the council members these things. Now, there's some stuff that is negotiations and it sort of has to be done somewhat privately before the public session. But what are the issues that are coming up to be voted on? And not just resolution number 27, what is the nature of that? Public input should be encouraged, intelligent public input. And I think that's what you're trying to get at with your website, how to get the information out there so people can make input that's timely, before the stuff happens, actually, and also complete or more complete than what sometimes even the papers do. The papers often can only respond to things after they happen.
Right. Well, and certainly, actually, a lot of the agendas and the meeting minutes and all of that, it still will just say Resolution 29 to change 5.7 of the charter, and without really understanding what that means, you can just be lost in those meetings, even if you're there every day. Mm-hmm. And I've been to a lot of meetings like that where I don't have the charter in front of me, so I don't know what exactly they're amending, or which is now why I bring my computer with me everywhere I go. But that's really the one of the things that we really care about with the accountability group is to say, we understand that we don't know all of the issues and we don't know all the information that goes into the decisions, but we believe that it's our right, and we should have the information, and we should understand why our elected officials make the decisions that they do.
Absolutely.
And if we ask those questions, we should, in a respectful manner, be able to get answers. And that's what we've been trying to work for.
Well, obviously, I couldn't encourage you and support you more. We're talking to Kristen Taylor, who is a Dearborn community activist. It's the only phrase I can think of to attach to you, but in fact, you're just a good citizen. You're doing what everybody really should be doing. Not everybody has the time or the knowledge, let's say, to use computers or go to the websites or... I think you took the Dearborn budget and you were scanning it in page by page after they handed it out, and
yes.
You've got JPEGs on the Facebook page. That's crazy, but that's what you did. And some people just wouldn't be quite up to speed with that. But so it's great that you can facilitate that. But really, it's just a matter of being a good citizen. And I would hope our government could, the city government, Dearborn, could actually get a little more open and proactive. We'll come back to this, of course, but since we have a few minutes with you, hopefully until maybe 1:20, 1:30 today, tell us a little bit about yourself. People want to know. No, I just mean your education background. What got you into, say, sort of being wanting to be involved more than the usual citizen is involved with social issues and politics? Did it happen all of a sudden or progression? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I guess I've just always been someone who gets involved. I'm a volunteer at heart. I remember one of my youngest memories with my dad was I grew up in the Chicago suburbs, and he would open up the park district catalog in the beginning of every season and say, "Okay, what do you want to learn how to do this time?" And so we would that's what I learned is how just go out and try something and see if you like it and don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess. Jumping forward a few years, I got my undergrad at Eastern. I also got my master's at Eastern. I worked in marketing for a few years, and I actually moved out to Virginia for a year after I graduated from college, worked in advertising. And when I came back to Michigan, I was still in marketing for a little while, but I realized that I wanted to help people in a way that I couldn't do it as in the position that I was in. And, you know, I always joke that I want to save the world, but I think we each can do that in our own little way. So I decided to go to law school, and I went to Wayne State, and I'm just finished my second year. I have a year left.
Mm. Okay. Well, good luck to you. Are you thinking of specializing? Lawyers can often specialize in something. There's boring stuff like like business tax law. Entertainment law is always exciting, and writing contracts for the big movie stars and TV stars. But are you thinking of any specialty at this point?
Yeah, I'd actually like to work in immigration law.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I've worked in the clinic through Wayne State has great clinics, and we have an immigration and asylum clinic that I've worked in, and I'm working this summer as well there for a client of mine. So that's been the law that, unlike contracts and other things, has really just kind of taken my interest.
And one of your volunteering positions you mentioned to us before the broadcast has been at Access or the Arab American?
The American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee.
Anti-Discrimination Committee, which is not actually Access, but...
Right, they're two different organizations.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And speaking of the discrimination, aren't you involved in the case that's going on at the, I believe it's Crestwood, there's some discrimination case going on over there. Aren't you involved somehow in that?
Yeah, so ADC, I've worked at ADC since October. I'm on the staff, and I handle all the discrimination cases that come through. So that can be anything, employment, work-related, individual incidents. And one of the cases, we don't have any attorneys in there right now, so... Sharif Akil is a civil rights attorney that is also our chairman of our board. And his client has filed, I guess, I don't know exactly what the specifics of what they filed, but there is an investigation with the civil rights department of the Department of Justice. Hmm. And they've come in to look at Crestwood and their hiring practices and their availability of English learning for students.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So actually was a progression of education and just volunteering jobs that has gotten you up to the present point of also, besides everything else you're doing apparently, also trying to be the facilitator for the Dearborn Residents for Accountability on Facebook.com. Okay, well, you're getting into too big a hole here, you think?
Well, no, they easily get confused. People see me with one, and then, you know, it's easy to confuse all the different groups, but because I've also work with the pools and the accountability group, and I work at a law firm as well over the summer now, so there's a lot going on, but, I mean, I think all of these are really good things, and most mm-hmm. of the focus of each of these little groups is just to make Dearborn a place that we all want to live and stay and attract other people to come to. And if we can have a part of making that a better place, then we're successful.
Well, with everything you have going on, you're a busy girl. Yeah. I'm surprised you have the time to stop by our studio.
Well, this is your chance. You can express your opinions here, which are not necessarily those of Dearborn Responsibility for Accountability. What do you think of some of these issues? Like, what about those pools? Should they stay open, in your opinion? The last we heard is that the Save Our Pools Citizens Group didn't want to go ahead with the city's plan for a SAD, which is a terrible acronym, but because if you start paying it, you might get SAD because you have less money, but a special assessment district for those people within a certain area around the pools. Which, when Mayor O'Reilly was on a special edition of the show, actually the Tuesday Forum, folks, on our website, whfr.fm, back in April 24th, he said he thought that the average homeowner in these areas would have to pay an extra $65 a year. But in fact, that would be less than if they took out pool permits for their family. And so, you know, if they're nearby, they probably use the pools and they get some card saying you get in free as much as you want. Other people in the city would have to get the pool passes to whatever pool they were going in like they do now. It seemed like a good idea, but if I'm not mistaken, and you know, of course, the Save Our Pools group was suspicious of what the future might be or the actual wording of that resolution, how much input they might have, how high it might be raised. And in fact, even the mayor, when he's here, he just sort of estimated the cost. So what is it really going to take, I guess, to maintain those pools, fix a few, and then maintain them? So is that where it stands now? They don't want to do that. They're sort of in favor of a citywide millage?
Right. That's a very good summary. It's been a really complicated process, but I was actually on the subcommittee that dealt with this on almost a weekly to biweekly basis. We met a lot, and we had a lot of conversations about it. Where we ended up with that was there were a lot of questions. The process itself seemed flawed to SOP. We learned at the very tail end of all of this what certain steps that would happen that we had never known would happen before. And we were trying to explain this to people who would have to vote and would have to pay it out of their pocket. It was really difficult to do that. And we got to a point where we felt that it would be too divisive. It was already pitting neighborhoods against each other because some people expected certain neighborhoods to pass and others to fail. And if it failed, that meant that pool was going to be closed permanently. And, you know, we felt it was a rushed process and we wanted to take a step back. So we withheld the petitions and then, you know, we kind of regrouped, and that's when we came up with the proposal and we presented that to the council at the budget public hearing. And exactly that is we suggest to do a citywide millage, just very similar to what we did with the libraries last time. Mm-hmm. And we have one right now for the Ford Community Performing Arts Center, which expires in fiscal year 2013, so next year. And so we suggested to do something like that, that would cover the capital improvement costs for the pools and the operation costs for the pools, including Dunworth and Ford Woods, because SOP is about being a whole city, not just these small pools. We recognize this part of the compromise we talked about. We recognize that the city has committed to Ford Woods and Dunworth, and we've been told that multiple times. So in good faith, you know, if we're able to bring this to the city and all the residents across the city to vote on whether they will pay extra to keep all of the pools, then we are including all of those costs, everything that the city wants to do and that we would like to do.
And this is a little confusing, but as I understand it, yes, the extra millage that people had to be paying, or was it bond issues or whatever it was, to actually finance, to pay for the Ford Community Performing Arts Center will be done, will be expiring next year.
Right. That was a 15-year-long millage.
Right. And so the pool group, Save Our Pools, SOP, standard operating procedure, not necessarily, but they are saying if you vote for extending that, would some of that money then still go into supporting the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center? I understand they still have costs and they're not making a profit, although I don't think most city services should make a profit. You need to pay for the things you get, you know, mm-hmm. and so it does come out of taxes, but it. So there's not just the pools that would be in that same amount of extra millage.
Well,
would money go elsewhere too, or is it just pools?
It would just be pools. So Ford Performing Arts Center millage would end, and
right.
that would
so
be over.
This is not
and
a renewal
a new millage,
per se,
right.
but it's a similar amount of how
in
many mills?
In theory. Right now, the Ford Performing Arts Center is 0.65 mills.
Okay, 0.65, less than a mill. And, mm-hmm. and the library's got a mill last year, right. but as we understand it, they really need 3 mills to keep
right.
open. Which is an ongoing issue. I wish they would have gone for the whole operating amount. Dearborn Heights, all you know, has many libraries, but that's how they operate their libraries. They have a totally separate millage. The city budget doesn't have to worry about that, but of course everybody pays so that little amount. I just wonder, well, first of all, explain to us, how does a millage proposal get on the ballot? City council, I assume, can just vote to make it happen.
Yep, that's one way. The council can vote, and then it goes to legal, I believe to legal, to get all the language mm-hmm. and all of that to be completed. Or you can get 3,000 votes or 3,000 signatures on a petition.
Okay.
And then it goes through the same process.
So that's sort of 3% of the people in Dearborn, or actually not everybody can sign. It has to be 21 or older, registered citizen.
I don't know.
Citizen.
We haven't been given details on that. I don't
yeah.
know.
But so the city's sort of saying, okay, if you want to do that, do you get the signatures? So has anybody in the council or the mayor said, we'll put that on the agenda and talk about it and get the council to vote it in? No?
I think we've heard it both ways right now. It was brought up during the budget discussions and the last budget meeting they had before the adoption, they said, let's schedule you guys separately for a separate meeting. And so we plan that we'll be getting the chance to talk to them.
Because there must
about
be
it.
A deadline somewhere, about 90 days before. I mean, they have to get mm-hmm. it, as you said, go through legal, get it worded in appropriate ways, but then also make it available even for the absentee ballots, which will have a deadline of October 5th, 6th. I can't remember when election is in November. But in fact, even get those ballots printed, they have to be printed. They're not electronic. It has to be somewhere in September or end of August. So there's not much time, really, a couple months only, for yeah. either a petition drive or the city council to get their act together. It seems to me, though, because there's so many things that I think people, like myself, I mean, I like the service in Dearborn. I would like to see some of them, more of them, guaranteed. Right now, we have a guarantee in the charter about staffing for police and fire. I like that idea. Okay, I know crime is going down a little bit, but I still think we need professionals, full-time people there, adequately trained and updated and all that when we need them, if we need them. And it's not a percentage that's much higher than other districts, although I guess Allen Park is going belly up and they're not even going to have a police and fire department, and Dearborn's going to sort of under contract help them out. But who knows? But but when I think of the things that I want to see support each year, pools, I'd like to see City Hall stay where it is. I mean, I understand the operating efficiencies and the mayor's argument about, you know, the energy efficiency of the ADP building and how it's going to save us in years coming. And I, you know, that's a good argument. I mean, it's pragmatic. But I would actually vote yes on a millage to fix and keep the present City Hall. And no disrespect to Art Space, but supposedly they were looking at several facilities, not just the City Hall. I just think it's historic and so on. The people of Dearborn many years ago, they voted extra millage to support the historic Fordson High School building, which was falling apart, you know, but there's history there. And people said, we want to preserve that. The Historical Museum, current situation is they're going to try to live within their means. They had a big donation that they're going to try to do some upgrades and then try to live with reduced funds, but they deserve support in the city. Is that the way we should run government, with all these, just to protect us from the politicians, to to guarantee these services? We had to guarantee trash pickup by a separate millage? Do we have to guarantee? That shouldn't be necessary, you know? I think the opinions of the show, folks, are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, but those of us in the studio right now. And thank you, Henry Ford Community College, for that freedom of speech. But it seems to me that our elected representatives, democratically elected, supposedly, that they should represent the needs most of the time of the people and make those hard decisions. Support the things that need to be supported. I would assume, you know, with this technology age, would you be in favor of citywide voting electronically to find out the will of the people? Like every week or every month?
Oh, I thought you meant issues? For an actual election.
No.
Oh, okay. I don't think it would
be plebiscite. Plebiscite.
Okay. I don't know. There are certainly a lot of issues right now that everybody can weigh in some way or another. But I think you said the exact word that is the reason behind the accountability group, in essence, is supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody knows.
Yeah.
We don't know the real numbers behind anything. We don't know anything about ArtSpace. Nobody knows any information besides what we may have heard in an argument presented at a budget meeting. Mm-hmm. And that's not fair. We shouldn't have to be forced to accept or make decisions based on a couple of arguments and a lack of information.
Yeah, there's so many people that ask very good questions at dearborn.patch.com and citizens, Dearborn Residents for Accountability. The few comments I made. Why can't the city have somebody, not necessarily Mary, but somebody respond to those responsible questions or give that more in-depth picture? I mean, again, Mayor O'Reilly was great here. We've only asked him to be here 1 hour each year, but the amount of information he was willing to share that he knew at the time, and I know there's still questions about even that interview from April 24th, but if he'd be willing to do that more frequently, like has the mayor ever had a press conference or citizens conference where people just, you know, even after a state of the city, doesn't take questions,
mm-hmm.
because there's really not enough time to give, like, even I had a list of 30 issues I wanted to bring up because of the depth of his responses, which was great. We only got through about 10 or 12 of them. But I thought, wow, I never read this stuff in the paper. I never read what you said anywhere. And that's, of course, maybe not the complete picture. Other people may have other points of view. But let's get it out there. You know, let's find out. I don't think he would have half the criticism he has from some of these regular naysayers on the various websites, internet sites, if they could just hear his side of it, at least, and the information that he has available. And I don't think he lies. I really, what do I know, but...
He made some really, really good points, arguments, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. Listening to him talk, I walked out of here with a lot more knowledge about the stuff than I had previous. So
yeah,
listening to him talk was pretty good.
Well, there's a certain – we've talked yesterday. The Residents for Accountability Group met for 2.5 hours yesterday to talk about what it is.
By the way, you were at the Good Times Cafe.
Yes,
where
we
is that?
It's on Michigan
West
Avenue.
West Dearborn?
Mm-hmm, in West Dearborn, right across from Panera Cares, across the street.
Oh, across the street.
I guess –
sort of down the street? Or is it right on the
down
corner?
The
a little down that, whatever that street is there. So
it's
on
Michigan.
The south side.
It faces,
south side of Michigan Avenue facing Panera Cares.
No. It faces, it's right next to Buddy's.
So, yeah.
So it faces the, is it Starbucks right across the street from it?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's next to Buddy's, but it's not the library. So
it's
the other side of Buddy's.
Right.
Okay, it's west of Buddy's, immediately west.
It's just tucked right in there.
Adjacent
but you,
to.
It, yeah. They have a little patio in the
cool.
back, too, so you can access it easily.
Okay. Well,
so
I just hadn't been there, and if you put that on the website or something, maybe for those of us that haven't been there before, put at least the street address. They say we're going to meet at the Good Times Cafe because, you know, I've only lived in Dearborn for almost 40 years, so I don't keep up with the latest hotspots, I guess. So, but
they do have a Facebook page.
Well, I should have known.
Everybody's got a Facebook page.
So you can find
I could
there.
Just Google them or go on to MapQuest or Google Maps.
But it was
Maps,
actually really nice. I had never been there before when we had a chance to have the meeting. I said, uh-huh. Let's go there so we can try it out. Uh-huh. And it was nice.
Seems
but so we met.
Yes, that's what I wanted finally to ask you. We only have a couple more minutes. What's the next direction of Dearborn Residents for Accountability?
Well, we realized that we need to take on the things that we can control, which meant if we need to get information, then we have to decide how we can get that. And we can go on and on about, you know, whatever the website may or may not be lacking, but we know we can reach out to people and have individual meetings, and we know that we can talk to people. That's the best way to get information. So we talked about every single issue that possibly is coming up in Dearborn, and we actually decided to come down on taking on the City Hall issue as the issue that we need to bring some light to and get information about. And so that's where we're moving forward to now.
Of course, a plug for us on this station, those that listen to this show. We have interview request in with Tom Tefelsky and Brian O'Donnell from the council, since they voted against the sale of City Hall, and Tefelsky voted even against the 2013 budget. Mm-hmm. Probably trying to stay consistent there. And of course, he's council president. And I've actually had a chance to talk to him on the show at length, in depth, and we'd like to do that.
Yeah. We're hoping they'll come to the farmers market next week, next Friday.
Yes, we're going to be live at the Dearborn Farmers Market from 10 until 1 doing brief interviews a couple times an hour, and then weather permitting, probably wouldn't permit today, but we'd be live with this show from 1 to 2, and this is a show that is podcast, saved, archived on the website so that people can listen anytime. And I think we've got the last 3 years of shows there. It's embarrassing almost, but people could go that far. Now, what did he say 3 years ago? Uh-oh. If your group or any people in the community want to get in touch with WHFR, if you think we should do a special show, there's our next guest, and Kevin is going to go and open the door for him. Oh, he's the chief engineer of Henry Ford Community College. I bet he's got a key. But anyway, I'm offering to you, too, Kristen Taylor here of Dearborn Residents for Accountability, that if you have a need for a forum or a couple of in-depth interviews, you could even host it yourself if I was running the board, whatever. We'd be glad to do that. I mean, there may be a need for information, and maybe this is a way to get it out at more extended length.
That's a great idea. I really appreciate that.
And we are, and certain number of our talk shows, and we have three a week that we archive all of those. So people, if they can't listen at broadcast time, they can always catch it some other time on the net. So so we open that opportunity to you. Hope we can touch bases with you and your group and other community activists in the future. That's what the show is all about. Local issues, news and views, things you can't pick up, even if you do read the two papers and catchpatch.com every day. There's more to information and the exchange of information, the interaction of it, than can be done in sometimes those one-way media. So thank you for being here today. Any final comments? How do we get in touch? Again, either with you or Dearborn Residents for Accountability?
You can reach out to us on Facebook, Dearborn Residents for Accountability. You can also, you're welcome to send me an email, message me on Facebook, make me a friend, whatever, and reach out. My information is all there.
Okay, great.
I'm always happy to talk to anybody, get ideas, bring you into the meetings, and just discuss it so we can move forward together.
Yeah, but going on what you said about ideas too, both Tefelsky and O'Reilly, going back to the City Hall, they both have good, valid arguments and ideas, but which one's right? So thanks again for coming in. I know you're busy.
Thank you.
We'll see you more in the future, I hope. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
This is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Here's Jim Hightower and his commentary for today, and we have another guest coming right up afterwards, so stay tuned.
Even a hog must sometimes gag at the stench of its own sty. Maybe that's why some corporate lobbyists have launched a campaign to spiff up K Street, Washington's corridor of shameless high-dollar influence peddlers. The pay-to-play profession is so soiled and stinky that even the odious Newt Gingrich couldn't stand it, claiming in his hapless presidential run this year that he's a corporate, quote, consultant, not a lobbyist. Adding to the industry's reputation for ick is the sight of Jack Abramoff, the convicted sleazeball lobbying hustler who's now on a remorse tour, charging groups across the country $10,000 a pop to hear him talk about, get this, ethics reform. Sad to say, but lobbying is a huge and hugely profitable industry. There are 535 members of Congress, one president, and 23 cabinet officers in charge of our national government, but they are constantly swarmed by 12,000 registered Washington lobbyists. These hired guns hauled in $3.3 billion last year for helping big oil, big banks, and other biggies gouge us. Unsurprisingly, the American people are disgusted by them. So the head of the American League of Lobbyists, yes, lobbyists have their own lobbying group, now says that a spritz of magnolia-scented Glade or maybe one of those pine tree-shaped air fresheners is needed to improve K Street's smell. Would he include actually staunching the stench by banning lobbyists from doling out campaign cash to lawmakers they're hustling? Oh, gosh, no. That might actually work. Instead, the lobbyist is proposing less pungent reforms like giving, quote, ethics training to those in the trade. Wow, imagine how that would have changed Jack Abramoff. This is Jim Hightower saying, to make real change, go to the People's Watchdog Group Public Citizen at citizen.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
So what do you think about Jim Hightower and those lobbyists? You've heard about lobbyists before. Well, I think we got to clean that up, folks. Put it on your list of things that we've got to change in government. Yes, we need some change there. 12,000 paid lobbyists in Washington, D.C., and we only have about 600 elected officials. Oh, my gosh. How many per day does that mean that visit them, give them free lunch and dinner? It is one of those things that we have to change. And, of course, I'm sorry to say, and this is my own personal comment, Jay Koronek, Henry Ford Community College Station Advisor for WHFR, I have to say that really the elected officials are quite dependent on the money they get from these lobbyist organizations. So, yeah, they know they're a little shady and they go to excess and even some insider trading information goes out through those lobbyist groups to give them a Wall Street advantage. And there's just all kinds of scandals there. But they get most of their campaign money from these lobbyists these days. So if they change the system and make them more responsible or accountable, they won't be getting as much money. So maybe they won't get reelected. So they're scared of that. So that's Hightower's comment. Kevin?
Yeah, I just walked in the middle of it, but everybody agrees that you need to take the money out of the elections, get the big super PACs out and all that. So,
yep. Okay. Well, do what you can, folks. Tell your elected officials, John Dingell in this area to Washington D.C. to make some changes there. I know he's resistant. I've talked to him on this issue before, we need to make some changes for the better. And, of course, the first half hour today, we talked to Kristen Taylor, and that is KRISTYN Taylor. But now we have a very, very, very special guest in the studio. They're all special. Sam Greco, who is the physical plant chief engineer here at Henry Ford Community College. Main campus, Sam, or all the campuses?
Main campus primarily.
Okay. Okay. And what does a chief engineer do?
Well, kind of responsible for everything from border to border on the campus, from the highest point of the roof to the lowest part of our mechanical rooms and all that. We oversee the heating, cooling of the campus, oversee the custodial services, ground services.
Grounds, that's like the trees, the flowers, the
cutting the grass.
Right, right.
Well, by the way, the campus looks great, better than ever. And I know because of some of the building upgrades we've had, some of those building grants and some of the building funds that we provided from millages and so on has actually included some money for landscaping, which means planting trees and flowers around. But the campus looks really, really great these days. Are you also responsible for maintaining those lakes that we have on campus now? They're drainage pools, actually. But
yeah, that's a lot of people sort of think that it's nice they put a pond back there.
Right.
But the pond serves a specific purpose on the campus, and that is a detention basin for the water that drains off of our parking lots.
Yeah, so all the bad stuff, the oil from cars that leak oil and radiator fluid end up being trapped in that pond before they get released into the river, correct?
Well, not only the pond, we unfortunately lost our soccer field and our baseball diamond, and that was kind of a necessity because that whole area underneath, that area has a huge underground detention basin under there as well. Hmm. It was either that or, put up a 20-acre pond on campus to meet the needs required. Right. But we have a huge underground detention basin. plus the detention pond back there.
And the pond, though, is very organic. I mean, there's families of geese, ducks, whatever. I don't know what they, but they're right from the beginning, they're there. And you check the water, and isn't there even a sprayer or a bubbler in one of them, which would put more oxygen in the water.
Right.
And so you're actually trying to make it an organic or an ecologically sound facility, too.
Right.
Kevin mentioned oil, but it's not just a cesspool, folks. I've been out there. It's it might pick up some extra residue from the lots, but it's actually a sort of a living entity, too. And that's under your job spec, right, to make sure that keeps going?
Yes, it is. And, you know, one thing, too, that we've added on campus here that a lot of people, in fact, I had one person say, you know, they're doing such a beautiful job, but why aren't they cutting the grass on the islands? If you look between some of the islands, you'll notice sort of a swale there with the grass just growing wild. And while those are, you know, by design, they're known as bioswales.
Mm.
And as the parking lot's drained, as you mentioned, you know, the oil and all that, a lot of that water is, rather than filtered into the sewer system and into the detention pond, is sort of washed off into these bioswales. And they're plants that are very hardy and can handle some of the contaminants, the salts and the oils, and, you know, kind of adds to the nature. There's, you know, native grasses planted in there.
What are all those orange flags?
That's what I was going to bring up.
We're on campus. We walk around there, and it's beautiful. But there's strings with orange flags, little orange flags on them,
like
that go down into the water. Can you tell the water level from those?
No. Actually, those were installed as a deterrent to the geese.
Oh, a deterrent.
Yeah. We
too many geese?
Well, you know, the geese are wonderful.
Yeah,
I mean, you love looking at them, but, you know, our grounds crew spends a significant amount of time keeping the sidewalks clean and free of the goose droppings. And
it used to be, before we had the ponds, it used to be even worse. I think the ponds actually have attracted some of the geese to go over to these more natural areas, luckily. But, it's an issue, folks. That squishy, squishy feel where you're walking to class is not good. And you do a great job of keeping the campus clean and that, but thousands, it seems like thousands of geese have adopted us as part of their home. I mean, part of the year.
It's a beautiful thing. Yeah. I mean, you know, you see nature, you know, if you come here at the right time of day, we've got a very large deer population now. You know, the
coyotes have even been
the
seen.
Coyote, yes, yeah. Raccoons, all good, you know.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people say, I love looking at them, but in somebody else's yard. Well, unfortunately, you know, they're in our yard here, and we want to control them and still, you know, kind of contribute to the environmental aspect of having them around.
Which is why we get to our topic of the day, the June 2nd. Tomorrow, Saturday, June 2nd, there's the Rouge Rescue, which is an annual affair. Friends of the Rouge volunteer group, nonprofit, sets this up every year. It's a 26th annual event, almost as old as WHFR. It's our 27th year. So I'd like to say we give them the idea, but no, but that kind of history, folks. And we are one of the four locations in the Dearborn area where people can come out and help to help the environment. And I just want you to tell a little bit about what's planned here on campus, because just like the other locations, we would like volunteers, anyone who would like to help with the project. So talk about time and how they have to come prepared, what they might have, what activities we might have for them. In each of these places, folks, there's food and beverages served to just no charge, I don't think. And it says many of the sites are family-friendly. I wonder if ours is going to be family-friendly.
Oh, definitely,
okay.
Yeah.
We're on campus here. We're on the main campus, Henry Ford Community College, just south of Ford Road off Evergreen. And the location, if I'm not mistaken, is primarily the Kingfisher Bluff area, which is far on the western part side of our campus.
Right.
Okay, so come down the road south and you turn right and you keep going all the way on the so-called perimeter drive that goes around the back of the campus there. And that's where we're going to be gathering, Kingfisher
right.
Bluff.
We'll have a tent there and a table set up for registration.
Starting at 9 o'clock?
Yep. Yeah, 9 o'clock till 2 o'clock tomorrow. And people are free to come there at 10 o'clock and 11 o'clock, leave at 1 o'clock, and we're not going to hold anybody to say, hey, 9 to 2.
I guess I had to ask today, what about weather permitting situations?
Rain or shine.
Okay. Okay.
And it's real easy to find, too. I mean, you pull in either the North Drive or the South Drive, and you drive down either way. Once you get to the backside of campus, you can't miss it. That Kingfisher Bluff is pretty big.
What do you expect to do during this time tomorrow with enough volunteers? I think you have about 40 people signed up now, but we need more. And by the way, if you're an alumnus of Henry Ford Community College, what a great way to help your school. It's the first time I think we've had part of this event on campus, yes?
No? This is the third time we've had it. This is definitely the biggest. We've had a really, really great turnout of commitments from faculty, staff. We've got a Boy Scout troop out of Dearborn that's coming out and doing their community service.
Great.
I like to mention our grounds leader, Harold Kelly, too.
Okay.
He's a certified master gardener, and he's volunteering his time as well.
So what are we going to do? The bluff is sort of a government-funded lookout, but it was also a embankment design.
Stabilization.
Yeah. So that more of the ground is not going to fall into the tributary. And the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers did that for us under their direction a couple of years ago. But what are we going to be, citizens, going to be trying to do tomorrow?
Well, if they put the bike trail in, or the hiking trail, whatever you want to refer to it as.
It's both.
That's over the river. It's beautiful.
Yeah,
very nice.
Real beautiful.
But unfortunately, you have these areas, and invasive species tend to take over the areas.
Vines,
and,
bushes,
got,
all kinds.
Well, the primary ones, we've got honeysuckle. We've got garlic mustard that is growing wild all over the place, and it smothers out a lot of the other plants.
Now, I lived down in Asheville, North Carolina for 6 years, and they had a really, really big problem with kudzu. We don't have that up here, do we?
There's some in Michigan.
Yeah. Is there?
Yeah, in certain communities by the lakes and that, they have problems with that, even around Traverse City, I know.
It looks pretty, but boy, is it destructive.
Well,
yeah, that's the thing. A lot of it looks pretty, but the end result is
massively destructive.
So it's pulling out plants. You're going to do anything on that about all the trees that have fallen in the river? That'd be a big project.
Well,
I don't know how that's possible.
Well, but if you look down below the Kingfisher Bluff, we've actually had logs stabilized into the bank. They've been buried into the bank, cabled down to trap some of the sediment and help restabilize the bank there. So a lot of the fallen timber, people look at it as a nuisance, but a lot of it plays a very, very important part of the river. Of course, we don't like seeing tires and coolers and garbage floating in the river, but the
Rouge River is famous for that, although not usually by this part of Dearborn, but I'm sure it could happen anywhere.
Some parts in Hines.
Oh yeah, but we're going to be focusing primarily on eradicating some of the garlic mustard and some of the trees. We have the honeysuckles that grow around the perimeter there. Beautiful trees, flowering nice. The berries in the fall.
So what kind of attire would you recommend? Probably boots or shoes that you're not afraid to get muddy.
Exactly.
Long pants would be good because maybe some bug spray.
I'll be providing the bug spray for you.
Okay.
And I've got my first aid kit out there in case anybody comes into contact with any poison ivy or anything.
All right.
But, we're just looking at having a great time, and it's a very worthwhile event. Just getting the community together. Of course, we've got our Student Environmental Association and Bill Seacrest.
Right, one of our great student
clubs.
They're
going to be out there. I'm really proud to have Judy Kelly, who is our environmental science teacher, professor.
Well, it's an educational experience, too.
She is going to come out there, too, and she has volunteered her time and all that. So she's going to be working primarily with the scouting group. So not only will they be helping out, they're going to be getting a good education in environmental science and invasive species.
Can't imagine a more necessary skill and job for the future than environmental science to keep our land, air, water, and even food clean. I mean, imagine. Think of the concept, folks.
Especially the water.
And we've got to do better. I mean, anybody that's gone even up north a little bit, the air is fresher to breathe, and you know there's a lot of contamination around here and in any big city, of course. But we've got to work on that for the future, and this is a good educational experience. I think, you know, families are welcome in most of these for most of these activities. Probably the kids should be at least walkable. I don't think we need too many babies in strollers, but you don't have a daycare facility available.
No.
So, well, I just want to say that because you say family friendly. People, oh, I can bring all my babies. No, I don't think so, unless they stay in your car. And
that's not a good idea.
Then you need the windows down and some babysitter with them. But no, seriously, this is very valuable work, and thank you for pulling together all the things required. This is Sam Greco here, our physical plant chief engineer at Henry Ford Community College, and look forward to a successful day tomorrow. I have to apologize up front and on the air. Several months ago, I got credentials to go to a political convention in Michigan, and tomorrow is the day. So I'm sending Kevin instead. He didn't know that, but
I would actually love to go.
Yeah,
to
but
tomorrow.
He has something to. But we have. Yeah. But we really want you to come and consider volunteering. It's only a few hours from 9 to 2, and there are other sites in Dearborn if you would prefer to go to those. And that information is on dearborn.patch.com, as well as Dearborn. PressandGuide.com. Just look up the story about the Rouge Rescue. Finally, Sam, I said I was going to compliment you. You know, I've been at this college since 1968 as an instructor for 40 years and been the advisor for WHFR since we were just a club. And let me tell you, folks, one of many, the wonderful, wonderful people here at this college, which is why I guess I'm still here even after I'm retired. So, why don't you go somewhere? Why don't you leave after you're retired? Well, I love this place, and I love working with so many of these people. You know, physical plant facilities, they make possible the on-campus activities. They make possible the extra needs for heating, cooling, electricity for WHFR. And anything that's needed within the scope of their resources, Sam is one of the most wonderful people to work with. He and his crews, I mean, you inspire them too. I mean, just get the job done the best way you can. Everybody is a little bit crazy about their own needs, and I think you understand that. You know how to work with people who are freaking out, pardon the expression, sometimes myself, and because a lot of things are important to different people, and you find a way to sort of balance it all and get stuff done. So thank you. Just thank you very much for the community of the college.
Thank you. I back a long time, and I mean, you know, your whole group has been a real, real pleasure to work with.
Well, we try to give you, like, any leftover food or beverages from our events. So,
and I want
before you have to clean up. They have to clean up after us. Imagine that. But it's their job, and everybody does it wonderfully here. Kevin?
I wanted to thank you personally and the rest, not just you yourself too, but the rest of the staff that keep this campus looking the way it does, because it is really, really pretty. So thank you.
I thank you guys. You know, Kevin, Jay, it's been a real pleasure.
All right.
Well, we hope everybody can come out to Kingfisher Bluff here on the main campus, Henry Ford Community College, the west side of the campus, tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., part of the Rouge Rescue. And especially, hey, you alumni of Henry Ford Community College, come on over here. Help your institution become part of the family here, and do your thing for us. And you get some free food and some education out of it, too. So let's all work together on that. Thank you very much, Sam Greco, for coming by the Journal.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
We're going to continue now with some other stories for this week from the Journal's headlines, from the headlines that we look at in the papers. Many of these stories we've covered before because, you know, in this show, we can go immediately to either the people that are involved and or the websites where information happens to pop up right away. And that's not always the City of Dearborn website, I'm sorry to say. But let me just take a look at my list here. And there's an issue, and it's a budget issue. They're cutting the budget for the 19th District Court. The City of Dearborn has to pay for the cost of operation of that court, but the judges are, of course, elected, and the chief judge who does the administering is actually appointed by the state of Michigan. Oh, yeah. So the interesting thing is in the city council discussions and in the budget for 2013, city council was, they're costing us too much money. We're gonna cut their budget. Maybe we don't even need that extra judge. And I don't know where that's coming from. The state of Michigan, the people that manage all these district courts say, we need another judge. We don't need just three. We need four. The caseload here is fantastic. And what did the criticism come up from? I won't mention the name, from one of our council people. Oh, they're not collecting enough fees. In other words, fines. Shame on them. They're dismissing too many cases, and they're not setting the fines high enough. Well, excuse me, maybe those people are not guilty of anything that they need to be punished. They need to do a fine, and maybe it's not so serious that the fine has to be so high. How can the people, excuse me, do they really know every single case? Have they read the case files for the hundreds, I believe thousands of cases that go through the 19th District Court every year? Are they judges? Do they know who's guilty or not guilty? What types of crimes, if you will, or parking tickets deserve a higher fee? I think that's extremely inappropriate and very short-sighted. And I want more information, just like Kristen Taylor earlier. I want more information on how can our city council members say that. And I hope we get Ted Tefalsky, Brian O'Donnell, at least. We have, again, requests in because of previous stands they've taken over the last month to come on this show and talk about it more extensively, those issues, as well as this issue of the district court. And now it's a done deal in the 2013 budget that they're cutting like $100,000 or more from the administrative fees for the district court. How are they going to handle all those cases? I don't think they have any control over getting rid of a judge. I mean, making sure that an extra one is not elected. When all the evidence shows because of the caseload, they need a fourth judge, not to reduce a judge. How can they make that decision? I mean, that really boggles my mind because I just don't know. I mean, are they just spouting off the top of their heads like I'm doing right now? Have they looked at those thousands of cases and figured out who's guilty on their own and how many should have been punished and how high the fine should have been set? Well, on top of that, folks, guess what? The state of Michigan has cut funding. This is in the Sunday, May 27th, Dearborn Press and Guide. The state is taking more of local court fees. Page 4A here. That's right. They're taking more of the fees. That is, the fines. A change in state law has local courts sending thousands more dollars to the state for misdemeanor crimes, even violations of local ordinances. As of April 1st, the first $125 of all misdemeanor fines is sent to the state, local court officials said. Before that, the state only assessed a $75 crime victim's fee for more serious misdemeanors like assault. So now it's gone from $75 to $125, and now it's all misdemeanors. I thought all misdemeanors were not that serious. I didn't know there was different levels of misdemeanors. I thought a felony crime was a serious crime. I knew that. But now I find out, and Kevin is nodding assent here, that there must be different levels of seriousness to misdemeanors.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Okay, good. You didn't have to pay one of those fines yourself. So, okay.
I figured just like you,
you wouldn't admit to
it. Misdemeanor or felony.
You're right. Now, anyway, so now they're taking $125 everything. So if there is like a traffic ticket in Dearborn for $150, they're going to take $125.
So that
right off the top,
that leaves the
25
city
bucks for the city. But the city is saying, oh, you got to raise those fines.
Huh.
You know, that is if you're guilty of it. Now, you know, I remember Mayor O'Reilly, Judge Summers here, and maybe you weren't sitting in on this one with Dennis and I a couple months ago. And I said, Judge Summers, I have a friend that has a traffic ticket, and I was going to talk to you about that. And of course, I can't do anything about that. They probably get that all the time. You know, can you fix the ticket? I just want to know about the procedures involved and what a magistrate was. And he answered those, of course, nicely. But a magistrate is like a lower level judge who just does. Well, my friend, to end the story quickly, they went in, they pleaded their case, and they didn't have to pay the fine. Their argument of why they didn't deserve the ticket held up, I guess. The judge thought, yes, you don't deserve that ticket. So I'm just thinking, with this pressure from the city council, does everybody have to pay a ticket? And then, in a way, everybody have to pay quite a large ticket because they know the state is going to take the first 125, even with a not very serious misdemeanor.
That doesn't seem right.
No, but that's, well, the state is going broke, didn't you hear?
No.
I mean, everybody has to pay their share, except, of course, corporate entities who got their business taxes reduced. Where are those extra jobs, corporate entities? Come on, let's start hiring, guys.
They're making record profits, yet we got record unemployment.
Most of the big companies are, yep. I don't mind people making profits. And if, number one, they're making good products that are healthy,
legitimate,
and needed.
And making legitimate profit.
Of course, a lot of things aren't needed, but people buy them like crazy anyway, and that's their problem. You know, caveat emptor, let the buyer beware of stuff they don't really need. They're wasting their money. But if they're making good products that are environmentally sound and safe, then people should be buying them, and they should reinvest the profits not only in their company but also back to the community. And one way they could do it is just by hiring more people, expand that wonderful business that's helping us all. That's the pie-in-the-sky, optimist, naive view, but I would hope more people could see it that way.
Well, one thing I am against is, I won't name names, but there's a certain corporation that... They won't give their employees health insurance, and it has.
Not at all.
They're like the fourth largest family, I guess you could say, in the country. And even if they gave all their employees full benefits, they would still be the fourth largest family in the country. So they would lose no economic social status at all if they did. So that's the kind of things I'm against. To me, that's greed.
Yeah, that's not taking care of your employees, taking care of your family, really, of
the
workers.
The people who make you what you are.
I would think that they would be even more loyal and more productive with good health care, for example. Okay, so I just thought you wanted to look at that story and just see how the city doesn't want to pay more money. The state's just already taking it off the top. What is that? I don't want to have to go up on a court ruling in Dearborn because there's not going to be that much time or administrative help to hear my case fairly, and then they're under all this pressure to charge me, to find me guilty, first of all, political pressure to find me guilty of whatever it was, and then to make sure the fine is at least $125, otherwise the city doesn't get their cut. And that's crazy. That's a just crazy way to run the courts. I think we should have a special millage to support the courts. That's a joke.
Yeah,
we were talking earlier.
That one.
Yeah,
about a millage
all
for
the
everything.
Extra millages, right. Well, it's about 2 o'clock, and of course, Highway 61 here is going to begin shortly. We're waiting for Joanne Kay to arrive, and this is WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves. But we're want to continue just a couple more headlines here as we're waiting for Highway 61 to begin. Of course, the new City Hall, the information about the ADP building, it's already bought, $3.2 million, $500,000 more for closing cost. Obviously, there's got to be some remodeling and moving cost. I don't think they'll have the city clerk carry their own boxes down and computers, so I guess they have some city staff that could be put to that task instead of doing other things. But to me, it's going to cost almost the same as the reported $5.7 million to repair the present City Hall. And I just like that building. I know it's in the east side, not the west side or in the middle. I know it's inefficient. I don't know if we can make it greener, more easily.
There's got to be a way.
Well, there's got to be some expensive way.
One interesting thing that I just heard too involving that, you know, you got all the extra costs associated with moving, then moving in. Mm-hmm. I heard they want to move the Veterans Park now.
Well, they have this area between the ADP building on the east and it's the area that then connects with the area of the library. And what are they going to do with that fountain? But if they sell City Hall, what are they going to do with that park and some memorials there and the Hubbard statue? So they're proposing to use this ground, which is kind of an auxiliary soccer field right now, just east of ADP and just west of the Dearborn Centennial Library, as maybe a park. And they're just still getting ideas. That isn't a done deal what they're doing with it. But they think they're going to relocate the park facilities completely, including the statues, the memorial tributes, and whether they'll call it City Park or Veterans Memorial Park or whatever is not clear.
So there's more cost added there, too.
There's always, of course,